A morning of today's daf in Sanhedrin is Chaf Vav. We are starting today on Chaf Hamud Beis towards the bottom of the Amud. We are continuing the Gemara's discussion of Psula Edus, who cannot testify as a result of their behavior. The Mishnah back on Chaf Dalamud Beis gave us a list of people who are Psula Edus. A Goslin, someone who is a bona fide thief, so he can't testify. That is the Gemara assumes is a no-brainer. Based on the Pasuk, Altasha Rasha Aid, that you cannot allow a Rasha to be an aid, and it's clear that a Rasha in the context of somebody who steals is somebody who's automatically disqualified. It's Pasul min a Torah to disqualify in a court of law, and the Mishnah gave us examples of people who are Ka'in Gazlanim, people who are not outright thieves, but their behavior speaks to the fact that they do really like money, and they're ready to bend the law of the Torah in order to obtain that money. The examples of the Mishnah that we saw back on Chavdal Medbez is 1. Masachi Pekubia, somebody who gambles, playing dice. 2. Malva Beribis, someone who lends with interest. 3. Mafricha Yonim, people who are, according to one pshat in the Gemara, racing pigeons, another form of gambling. And 4. Socher Shviz, those people who are commercializing Shemitah produce. During the Shemitah year, all produce belongs to nobody. Anybody can take and eat the produce. In fact, there's a mitzvah to eat the produce during the Shemitah year. But somebody takes the produce and he sells the produce. And that is an Isser in the Torah. The Torah doesn't say explicitly that that's Asser. It's inferred from the fact that the Torah describes the Per Shemitah as le'achla, you have to eat it, and the Gemara Darshan's in a number of places, le'achla v'lo l'schora, you have to eat it and you cannot sell it. So these are the kinds of people who are clearly really, really interested in money, and as a result of that, they are puzzled to testify. The Tosfos on the Mishnah said that these are all psuli derabanan, these are all disqualified on a rabbinic level. They're not outright thieves. If they're outright thieves, they're pasul min haTorah. The Mishnah is describing additional people who are added psuli derabanan. In that, we learned yesterday that there were other people added to the list as well, meaning other people who, again, their behavior is not explicit gzela, but as a result of their behavior, the Chachamim were extraordinarily weary of such individuals as testifying, and therefore they were disqualified. Yesterday, the Gemara quoted a brisa that added a group of other people to the list. Extortionists, we added to the list as well. People who take from children, who take from people who don't have their mental faculty. The brisa yesterday added also shepherds and tax collectors. Again, people who we have strong suspicion to believe that they're in it for the money, and therefore they cannot testify. So along those lines, we're now continuing the Gemara right where we left off yesterday, on the bottom of Chaf Hamud Beis. It is 4 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We begin, Amar Rav Yehuda, Stam Ro Apostle. So Rav Yehuda says that if you have a ro, if you have a shepherd, so you have to assume that he's a thief, and therefore he's apostle. Now, generally speaking, as we're going to be learning in the course of today's daf, you want to be down the kapsachos, you want to judge people favorably, and you don't want to assume that the person is doing wrong. But again, by the shepherd, there's just enough evidence, it's a preponderance of evidence, that the likelihood is that he's stealing, and as a result of that, he is apostle Eidus. Stam Gabai Kasher. However, to be a tax collector, that doesn't automatically apostle you. Yes, you're in a position where you're going to be collecting money, and yes, you're in a position where you may be taking more than you should, but from a generic standpoint, we're not going to assume that the tax collector is a bad guy. In fact, the Gemara now is going to tell a story, and anecdotally, the Gemara is going to show us that there were a lot of tax collectors who were good guys, although admittedly, the Gemara story is anecdotal, but the Gemara obviously is making a point that there are a number of people out there that are good guys. So the Gemara tells the story of the father, Rabbi Zera, who was a tax collector for 13 years, and when his supervisor would come to town, so that means that he was the actual collector, the father, Rabbi Zera, but obviously he was not the one who was the recipient of the money. He then passed it on to the supervisor. So the supervisor is coming to town. So when he saw Talmidei Chachamim in town, so he told him straight out, go to your rooms, go hide. And as Rashi points out over here, in other words, what the supervisor is going to do is he's going to come into town and he's going to take a census. And based on the number of people that are living in the town, so that's how much he's going to charge in terms of the taxes over the course of this year. So if the father, Rabbi Zera, can create a situation where when the supervisor comes in, basically he's not going to see anybody in town. There's nobody there. So then the supervisor is not going to charge the community a hefty tax. So basically now what the father Rebbe Zera is doing is he's telling everybody, go hide, so that the tax burden this year will be significantly lessened. And when he saw the general town people, Amarish Nahara Asla Masa, so once again, he's warning the general townspeople as well that the tax, the supervisor is coming. And he says cryptically to them, you know, he's going to watch, he's going to shech the father in front of the son and the son in front of the father. This is a euphemism. It just simply means that when the supervisor comes, so there's going to be trouble. So the father, Rebbe Zera, now is giving fair warning to everyone in the city. Let's try to lessen the tax burden of the year. And then the Gemara continues. We're now on the very top of Chavav Amin Aleph. Umignizu kuli Amma. So everyone goes into hiding. Kaosa Amale Miman Nibai. And then when the supervisor actually comes, so the father, Rebbe Zera, turns to the supervisor and says to him, "Who do you want me to collect from?" Meaning you can't charge too much taxes for this particular town. There's nobody here, or barely anybody here. Now, when the father, Rebbe Zera, is dying, so he says, take 13 coins that were in my wallet, and give it back to so-and-so, meaning that he collected taxes on behalf of so-and-so, and for whatever reason, the Gemara doesn't tell us the details, but for whatever reason, he didn't need to pay that money, and so therefore, he wanted to give it back to its rightful owner. I took it from him, but it turns out that I didn't need it. So again, anecdotally, the Gemara is telling us the story to show that tax collectors are they're good guys, and we don't have to assume that they're thieves, and therefore stam gabayim are not pasul eidus. Okay, we're back to the Mishnah, and in the Mishnah we discussed the Mishnah had a cryptic line regarding Sochei Shvias or Osvei Shvias. One of the four examples in the Mishnah of Pasul Eidus is somebody who commercializes Shemitah produce. And then the Mishnah quoted a line which is Am Rabbi Shimon Betchila Yikaronosam Osvei Shvias. Originally they were called collectors of Shvias, and then Misha Rabu Anasim, and then when the rough people, the extortionists, when they started prevailing, so then they were called Sochei Shvias. It's a cryptic line of the Mishnah. When we read the Mishnah, I mentioned how at this point in time we're not going to say Pshat, but now we're going to say Pshat. The Gemara now is going to attack that line of the Mishnah, trying to understand it. My Kamar. So Gemara's question, very simple. What's the Pshat in the Mishnah? I'm Rav Yehuda Hachi Kamar. So Rav Yehuda now is going to offer one Pshat of the Mishnah. B'tchila yu omrim Osvei Shvias k'shem Sochrin Psulin. Okay, so we start off with the following. People who are just collecting Shemitah produce, so that's fine, meaning there's no prohibition of collecting Shemitah produce. You are allowed to eat it, and you're allowed to take a certain amount. Yes, the Mishnayos in Shvias do cap how much a person could take at one particular point in time, but to be just simply a collector of Peir Shvias, that doesn't immediately disqualify you. If, however, you sell it, You turn around and sell it, so then you're going to be pasul. So that was originally the position of the chachamim. But then, however, there were certain distributors who were obviously unscrupulous and unethical. But basically what they did is they waved money in front of the poor people, and they said to the poor people, look, you collect the perishables, you collect a lot of it, you turn around, you sell it to us, we'll buy it from you. And they induced the poor people to sell the perishables. Okay, now the poor people obviously are in a compromised position. They don't have a lot of money, but still, they should not do that. And so, chazulam or echadzev echadzev psulim. So now, the chachamim realized that even the poor people who are collecting were turning around and selling it. And so therefore, the chachamim said that everybody now is going to be pasul eidus, both the people who are actually selling it and the poor people who are collecting it, because in turn they're collecting it, but then they're going to be selling it. Kashuba b'nei Rachva. So the b'nei Rachva heard this pshat, and the b'nei Rachva were not happy with this pshat. It did not fit into the language of the Mishnah. Hi, Misha Rabu Anasim, Misha Rabu Atagarim Mibayilei. The word of the Mishnah is Anasim. Anasim means that people who are extortionists, people like members of the mafia. But the way we're describing it right now, the way Rav Yehuda is describing it right now, Tagarim, meaning we're just talking about distributors who are buying it from the poor and in turn turning around and selling it to other people. So the Mishnah's language should have been something more like Tagarim, not like Anasim. So now the Gemara is going to give a second pshat in the Mishnah. Ella, b'tchila hayu omrim echadzev echadzev psulim. So originally they said that everyone was pasul, both the people who collected the perishables and the people who sold it, for the reason that we explained, that even the people collecting it are assumed to have turned around and sold it to other people. Misha rabu anasim, however, as now the anasim are becoming prevalent, and who are the anasim? Umayninu arnuna. So now we're talking about tax collectors, but not like the tax collector we mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, but rather we're talking about now tax collectors who are really rough. And if you don't pay them, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So under those circumstances, now a special dispensation was given out to the people where you could take payer shvius and you can actually give it to these tax collectors in lieu of taxes. And the Gemara tells us that actually you can go even one step further. There was a certain situation where there were these very rough tax collectors who were coming into town, and Rabbi Yannai told the people, "Palku v'zar b'shvius, go and plant during the Shemitah year, mishum arnuna, so that you could pay off your taxes." So there was a heter given by Rabbi Yannai that during these stressful times, during these very tough times, it would be in fact allowed to plant during the Shemitah year so that you can have a means of paying off these taxes. So Chazal Amar, Osfim Ksherim Sochem Psulim. So from that point going forward now that there was a heter for certain people, or for a group of people to be planting and harvesting during the Shemitah year, so then if you're just Osei Shvius, if you're just collecting Shemitah, so you're fine, meaning because most probably what you're doing is you're using it to pay off the taxes. But if you are selling it, so obviously that shows that you are not doing so to pay off your taxes, and you are a violation of Shemitah, and again, because you are showing such a desire for money, so therefore you're going to be Pasul Eidos. The obvious question which Rashi touches on is the heter. How does this heter work? Rabbi Yannai told people that they can plant during the Shemitah year in order to pay off the taxes. You're not allowed to plant during the Shemitah year. It's a Nisr Torah. So how can you violate Nisr Torah just because we have taxes to pay? So Rashi addresses that, and Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. So Poku v'zara b'shvius. Rashi writes shvius b'zman hazeh d'rabbanan. Debatla kedusha tzaret. So Rashi says that the Shemitah that we're talking about is Shemitah b'zman hazeh. Nowadays Shemitah is a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'araisa. And Rashi writes very interestingly because there's no longer kedusha tzaret. Now there's no longer sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, and so therefore Shemitah gets downgraded from a d'araisa d'rabbanan. So essentially, what Rashi is saying is that because Shemitah nowadays is only a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'araisa, so therefore it allows for heterim. It allows for certain dispensations, and one of those dispensations that we're learning about right now is that in order to pay off the taxes, so you can afford, you can make use of this particular heter. If you take a look at the top Tosfos over here, Tosfos addresses the same exact question. How can we be violating the Isser of Shemitah just to pay off the taxes? Tosfos writes on the very top, Vim Tamar Mishum Arnuna Hitir Lachos Lizra Dehav Yisir Daraisa. So Tosfos articulates the question, V'yishlam Demar Bishriz Bezman Hazeh Darabanan. So Tosfos' first answer, just like Rashi, is that we're talking about Shemitah Bezman Hazeh, which is a Din Darabanan, which allows for a heter. Ina Tosfos also points out Yeshlam b'tepikuach nefesh u'sheshol ha'melach mas ve'ein lahem ma yipareinu u'meisa b'tfisas ha'melach. So another pshat says Tosfos is maybe Shemitah is min haTorah, but still there would be an allowance because we're talking about pikuach nefesh. It's not just that these tax collectors were rough; it's that your life was on the line. If you didn't pay your taxes, so then you would be taken by the king, and your life is threatened. And as a result of that, says Tosfos, one would be allowed to violate even Isur Daraisa, so that your life would be preserved. And Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi, V'hachi Yitmar B'Yerushalmi M'Shem Chai Nefesh. The Yerushalmi also supports such a viewpoint that this was a issue of Pikuach Nefesh. Back to the Gemara. Gemara now starts in with a story. The story is going to be taking us through the duration of the first Amud, and even into the Amud base of today's Daf. The story starts off, Rabbi Chia Bar Zanukiv, Rabbi Shimon Yor Tzedek HaVukazel La'aber Shana Be'asya. So two Amoraim, early generation Amoraim, were in the process of adding an extra month in the year. We discussed this extensively in the first parak of the Masechta. And they went to Asya to do so. Now Asya happens to be outside of Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara earlier told us that you can be a Ma'am B'Shana, but you can only do so in Eretz Yisrael. The second Tosfos on this Amud is bothered by that. See the second Tosfos, who discusses briefly the question of how they could do this outside of Eretz Yisrael. But in the meantime, however, we're continuing in the Gemara. Pagabu Reish Lakish. Itapel Bahadayu. Amar Ezel Echzei Hechei Avdei Uvdei. So Reish Lakish says, I'd like to tag along. And so Reish Lakish attaches himself to these two Amoraim, and because he wants to see the process, and he wants to learn the process of Ibr Shana, how to add an extra month into the year. Again, we discussed it back in the first parak extensively. So now, as they are walking together, so they see a person who is plowing the land. Now, it's during the Shemitah year. Now, just as another point of interest, we also learned back in the first parak of Sanhedrin that you're not allowed to add another month during the Shemitah year. So it is certainly a curiosity that our Gemara here is talking about adding another month, and it's talking about during the Shemitah year itself. So obviously that is a point of interest. So Reish Lakish, together with these other two Amoraim, see somebody plowing during the Shemitah year. Amar Lahen, so Reish Lakish immediately accuses the man of doing no good. Kohen v'chorish. So he's a Kohen, and he's plowing during the Shemitah year. Now, how does he know that the man's a Kohen? The Gemara later on will address that question. But in other words, Reish Lakish says he's plowing. So Amar lo yachol amar, agiston ani besocha. So the two Amoraim say to Reish Lakish, we could be malamitzchos. We don't have to assume that he's doing wrong. It could very well be that the property doesn't belong to him. The property could belong to a non-Jew. And so once the property belongs to a non-Jew, at least according to one opinion, the Gemara in Gittin, so that's Mafkia Kedusha, that removes the Kedusha, and therefore you could work the land during the Shemitah year. It belongs to a non-Jew. Suchaz Yalu Gavra Dahave Kasach Bekarme. And then as they're walking again in order to be Ma'abishana, so they come across another person who's pruning during the Shemitah year. Amalahem Kohen Vezemer. So again, Reish Lakish points his finger at the guy and accuses him. And he says that he's a Kohen and he's pruning during the Shemitah year. And you're not allowed to prune. And you're not allowed to work the land during the Shemitah year. So Amalei Yecholomer La'akel Beis Abad Anitzarech. So again, the two other Amoraim are Malam Mitzchus. Yeah, he's pruning the tree, but he's not pruning the tree for the betterment of the tree. He's pruning the tree because he actually needs the wood. During the Shemitah year, you're allowed to cut tree in order to get benefit from the wood. So they're assuming that that's what the guy's doing. He's using it for the base of body. He's using it for the olive press. Somehow the wood is going to help the process of the olive press. Okay. If I knew more about the olive press, I could help you out over there. But whatever. Rashi gives some sort of basic description of how the wood is going to be helpful with the olive press. In the meantime, Amar Lahem Reish Lakish is skeptical. Amar Lahem Alev Yodeh Im La'akel Im La'alka Kalos. Playing on the word that we just used in the Gemara regarding the way the wood is going to be servicing the olive press. So Reish Lakish says, Hashem knows if he's using it for Akel, if he's using it for the olive press, or La'aka Kalos, if he's really doing something destructive, meaning he's pruning the tree during the Shemitah year in violation of Shemitah. So Reish Lakish basically says, I'm skeptical. I don't think so. Now the Gemara over here just is stuck on a very small detail, and that is, of the two stories that we just learned together, which story actually chronologically takes place first? Hi, Amar Luhu Bereisha. Which story occurs first? Ile Mahakamaisa, the first story, Amar Luhu Bereisha, Hanami Lemer Agiston Ani Besocho. You see, the limud zchus that the rabbis gave for the first person was that he's working in a non-Jew's property. And that could have been just as good an excuse for the second person as well. So, Ela ha amar le'bereisha v'hada amar lo'hach. So the Gemara says it must be that we have to reverse the stories, where first they had the pruner, and the defense of the pruner is that he's pruning but only for the wood. In other words, he's not doing it for the improvement of the tree. Fine, and then they come across the second guy who's plowing, and now you don't have that defense, so you go with a different defense of that person, and that is that he's plowing in a non-Jew's land. Okay, so anyway, so what we have over here is Reish Lakish walking with these two Amoraim, who are going to be Ma'a B'Shana. They pass two individuals who seemingly are violating Shemitah. In both circumstances, Reish Lakish makes accusations that the person is in blatant violation of Shemitah, and the Chachamim are Malam Mitzchus. Maishna Kohen. The Gemara now asks a simple question. How did Reish Lakish know that the guy was a Kohen in both of those circumstances? Mishum dechshir yashvias. So the Gemara says that Kohanim, generally speaking, are lax in terms of their treatment of Shemitah produce. Rashi points out that their laxity results in the fact that we know that during Shemitah year, when you eat produce of the Shemitah year, which again you're allowed to do, in fact you're supposed to do it, it's a mitzvah to do so, but there's also what's called Izman Bir. It has to be destroyed by a certain point in time. When the produce is no longer in the field, so then the perishvies have to be destroyed. Now, what exactly that means in terms of destruction, machlokas and the Rambam and the Ravid, but for our purposes right now, let's just simply say that perishvies can only be eaten for a certain amount of time. Kohanim help themselves to the perishvius all the time, even after the Zman Bir. And we know this based on a Mishnah. It's either a Mishnah or it's a Braisa. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Sa'a truma shenafel l'mei asayin shal shvius, ta'ala. If I have one sa'a of truma that gets mixed up with 100 sa'a of perishvius, so that creates bitl. We know that in order for truma to become nisbatel, so I need a ratio of 1 to 100. So pachas mikan yukavu. However, if you have truma gets mixed up with less than 100 of perishvius, so then you let it rot. So in other words, a mixture of one sa of truma with 99 sa of perishvius, so you have to let it rot. Vavinaba. Now, after learning the brisa together, we're going to ask a very simple question. What's the big deal? Just give it to a kohen. Meaning, what are we talking about? A mixture of truma, which the kohen is allowed to eat, together with perishvius, which a kohen is allowed to eat. Everyone's allowed to eat perishvius. So why not just simply give it to a kohen? Technically, the Gemara said, sell it to a kohen minus the truma that's there, because the truma, obviously, you're not selling to the kohen. It's matnas kahuna. But in other words, give everything to the kohen. The Amar Reb Chiya Mishmei De'ula Zosemer Esnechshu Du'Kohen HaMashvius. So, and the explanation is because, generally speaking, kohanim are suspected of not treating the perishvius with its appropriate kedusha, like I explained earlier. In other words, they went past the Zman Bir. So kohanim are suspected of that, and therefore giving it to the kohanim is basically your machshel. You're going to create a stumbling block for the kohen, as he's going to be now lax and in violation of perishvius. Question: why are kohanim suspected over perishvius? Meaning, what gives them the right, or at least what makes it, what allows them to think that they have the right to eat perishvius beyond the Zman Bir? So Rashi points out over here, because Kohanim in general, when it comes to foods that have Kedusha, so Kohanim are privileged. Right? And Rashi says, we know Kohanim can eat Truma. That has Kedusha. No one else can eat Truma, but they can. Kohanim can eat Kachi Kedushim. They can eat from Karban Chatas. Again, that's a privilege. No one else can. So Perishvius also has Kedusha. So Rashi says that the justification of the Kohanim is that they think, look, we have entitlements. We can eat things that have Kedusha. So Perishvius also. Same thing. Other people can't eat it, but we can eat it. So that provided the rationalization for the Kohanim to eat the Perishvius even after the Zman Bir. Anyway, so let's stay focused on the story. So now we have Reish Lakish and these two Amoraim who are going to be Ma'abishana and Asya, and they pass along two people. And in both of those times, Reish Lakish points an accusatory finger, and the Chachamim are defensive of their Malamitzchas. Amru Truda he Dain. And now the two Chachamim look at one another and they say, you know, this Reish Lakish, he's difficult. So kimat la'asam sliko le'igra shlufa la'darga mituse. So now when they get to the house in which they're going to be ma'abishana, so they go up to the second floor, these two Talmidei Chachamim, and then as Reish Lakish is about to climb the ladder in order to go to the second floor, so they take the ladder away so that Reish Lakish is stuck now on the bottom floor and unable to participate with them in deciding whether to add another month to the year. Also, the comment of Rav Yochanan. So Reish Lakish goes to his brother-in-law, Rav Yochanan, Amalei B'nei Adam, Chashinim al-Shvius, K'shem la'abishana. So now Reish Lakish basically is lodging a complaint against these two people. He says, let me ask you a question, he says to his brother-in-law, Rav Yochanan. When I know people are suspect of perishvius. Now, again, he's not accusing the people of the Talmidei Chachamim of actually violating perishvius, but they are defending people who are in violation of perishvius. So he says to his brother-in-law, people like that, can they be ma'abrishana? Can they be the ones who are going to be deciding whether to add another month in the year? Hadar malokashali. Now Reish Lakish, before he gets an answer from his brother-in-law, he thinks a little bit more, and then he says, you know what, it's not really that difficult. It's really no different than cow herders. Remember the story that we saw just a couple of days ago in the Gemara, where you had, in the second parak, where you had these cow herders who were commenting on the seasons of the year. And they basically, the three of them were saying, it's too early for Nisan. And the Chachamim heard them, and the Chachamim then added another month. Now, originally when we saw the story, we thought that the Chachamim were adding the extra month because of the cow herders. And so, Reish Lakish is basically saying, you know, it's no different over here. Meaning those Talmidei Chachamim, they're no worse person, the cowherders, who were basically providing the information necessary to add another month. And yes, we're basically just learning together right now that Reish Lakish is referring to these Talmidei Chachamim as cowherders. Hada Amar Lo Dami. But then Reish Lakish thinks about it even more, and then makes another comment to his brother-in-law, and he says, Hasam Hadar Imnu Rabbanim Va'evru Allahu Shasa Hacha Kesher Rishayim Hu V'Kesher Rishayim Einam Min HaMinyan. Then Reish Lakish says, you know what, but I don't really think it's comparable, because even though the cowherders back in the second parak of Sanhedrin were advising, but ultimately when all said and done, it were the Chachamim who were adding the extra month. Over here, it's these people, meaning these Talmidei Chachamim, who are actually going to be adding the extra month, and they're Kesher Rishayim, and they're a band of wicked people. And they shouldn't and they shouldn't be adding the extra month. So now Reish Lakish really speaks very, very strongly against the Talmidei Chachamim, who are going to be Ma'abishana, referring to them to Kesher Rishayim. At this point in time, Rav Yochanan comments on Rav Yochanan Da'aka. So Rav Yochanan says that this is bothersome to me, meaning I'm really bothered by this idea that you are referring to them as Kesher Rishayim. Okay. Now, the Gemara notes, it's of course a point of interest, that only at this point does Rav Yochanan say something, meaning when he referred to them as Roi Bakar, so Rav Yochanan was still quiet, but once he referred to them as Kesher Rishayim, so then Rav Yochanan defended their honor. He also came to Rav Yochanan, so they came to Rav Yochanan, meaning they knew the entire dialogue, and Amrulei Karulan Roi Bakar V'lo Amrulei Mar V'lo Midi, so they say to Rav Yochanan, you know, your brother-in-law referred to us as Roi Bakar, and yet, nothing to say about that? You didn't defend us? So Rav Yochanan kind of shrugs his shoulders and he says, look, if they would have called you Roi Tzon, which as we learned earlier, that's even worse. So he says, what was I supposed to say to him? Meaning, it's Rav Yochanan basically says, like, okay, it's certainly not a flattering term, but that's not the worst. But when he referred to you as Kesher Rishayim, I'm adding a little bit more right now into the dialogue, but when he referred to you as Kesher Rishayim, so then obviously that's where he went way too far, and that's where I said something. Okay. And the Gemara ends the story over there, and we used an expression, or Reish Lakish used an expression of Kesher Rishayim. So now the Gemara is going to segue into where else do we find this term of Kesher Rishayim, my Kesher Rishayim. So the Gemara now is going to tell another incident where we see the term Kesher Rishayim being used. Now, this incident takes place much earlier historically. We are going now back to the time of Melech Chizkiah. King Chizkiah lived during Bayis Rishon. He was towards the end of Bayis Rishon. He was an extraordinarily good king. In fact, just a couple days ago in the Daf, we talked about how Limud HaTorah was at one of its high points in Jewish history during the time of Melech Chizkiah. And he was a tremendous melech. His father wasn't the best of kings. His son was not the best of king, but sandwiched between those two, you had Chizkiah. Chizkiah also lived during the same time as Melech Asher, Sancheriv Melech Asher. Sancheriv Melech Asher decimated the northern kingdom, took the Jews of the northern kingdom, the Asar Shvatim, the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom, and displaced them to the point where, to this day, we don't know where they are, supplanted them with people who lived in, people from Kusa. So in the northern kingdom, the Kusim, the Shomronim, were the people who were replaced for the northern tribe. Sancheriv then took his army and his campaign down to Yehuda in order to conquer the Jews living in the south, those living in Yerushalayim. At the time, the king was Chizkiyahu. And the Navi tells us that a miracle takes place, that on the night before the day where the Sancheriv and his army was going to wage war against Yerushalayim, so the soldiers died overnight. So anyway, the Gemara now is telling us another detail within all this within this history, and we're now learning about another personality who lived at the same time of Chizkiah. His name is Shevna. We're going to learn together that Shevna, although was a tremendous Talmud Chacham and although had a tremendous following, but Shevna himself was not a was not a good person. The Gemara will tell the story. The Gemara says, "My kasher Rishayim Shevna Havadarsh Betleisa Rav Vasa." So Shevna had 130,000 Talmidim, and Chizkia Havadarsh Darsh BeChadsa Rav Vasa, and Chizkia was darshening in front of 110,000 Talmidim. So Shevna had a larger following, and he had a larger shear, made up of 130,000. Chizkia only had 110,000. Kiasa Sancheriv Vitzara Led Yerushalayim. Sancheriv now came and laid a siege around Yerushalayim. Of Shevna, Pitka. Shevna now is sending a private letter to Sancheriv, the king of Asher, Shadar Begira, and he sent the letter via an arrow. Shevna Visiato Ishlima, Chizka Visiato Lo Ishlima. And the message that he sends to Sancheriv is that I am prepared to make peace with you. On the other hand, Chizkiah and his following is not prepared to make peace with you. The Gemara quotes the pasuk describing how Shevna is basically speaking Lashon Hara about Chizkiah. Lashon Hara is compared to a sharp arrow. So Chizkiah at that point in time was good and scared. He knew about this message that was sent to Sancheriv. Amar demachas v'shalam natcha daite because Shavuach basar ruba. Look, Shevna has more people. He has 130,000. I only have 110,000, and I am concerned that Akash Baruch Hu is going to be following Shevna since he's the majority. Kevin the ruba mimsura inu nami mimsura, and since the majority is going to follow, we're going to follow as well, and we're going to have to. We're going to have to surrender to Sancheriv because Shevna is the majority. So Banavi Vamerlo. So the Yishayahu comes over to Chizkiah and he says to him, "Lo tomron kesher lechol asher yomar ha'am hazeh kesher." So he communicates a message to Chizkiah, and the Gemara would like clarification. What exactly did Yishayahu say to Chizkiah? Klamar, Kesher Rishayim, Uvi Kesher Rishayim, Inam in a Minyan. And here is now where we see the expression for the first time. It's Kesher Rishayim. Shevna and his followers, they're a band of wicked people. And Inam in a Minyan. And as far as counting is concerned, even though quantitatively they're more, but they don't count. In other words, they are Kesher Rishayim. Now Shevna at this point in time thinks that he's going to be victorious. He thinks that Shevna surrendered to Sancheriv Melech Asher will result in him becoming the leader and the king of the Jewish people. So what he does to show everybody that he's going to become king is that he digs for himself a grave amongst the monarchy. And Banavi Vamerlo, so Yishayahu goes over to Sheva, and he says to Sheva, "You're not going to become the king, and all this is not going to end well for you." Malachapo umilachapo, ki chetzavtelchapo kever. So first the Navi says to Shevna, "You had no business digging up the grave amongst the Davidic monarchy, and you are going to... and it's not going to end well for you." Hinei Hashem etaltelcha totala gever. Kadosh Baruch Hu will have you wander like that of a man. And the Gemara comments, Amarav Totula de Gavra Kashmi de Itzisa. Men wandering are worse than women wandering. A woman wanders, so people will have Rachmanas on her, people will take her in, people will take care of her. Men wandering, however, no one has Rachmanas for such an individual. The Navi goes on, and the Gemara now explains what the Navi is saying to Shevna. The Shevna got Saras, and the Gemara links the words, describing the Sarah where he puts the scarf over his head. So the word Ya'ateh is used in this context. It's used by Shevna. So kind of like a Gzeres Shava, teaching us that Shevna got Tzaras. Snof Yitzanecha Tznafa Kador Al Eretz Rachvas Yadayim. So the Gemara again continues with the pasuk in Yishayahu, and again explains Tanahu Bikesh Kalon Beis Adonav. He wanted to embarrass his master, meaning Chizkiah. So Lefichach Nefach Kvod LeKalon. So therefore, he Shevna was embarrassed. He have anafik ihu. So now Shevna is leaving Yerushalayim, being prepared to surrender himself and his people over to Sancheriv. So what Shevna expected is that he was going to walk out of the gate of Yerushalayim, and 130,000 followers are going to follow him. Also, Gabriel acted l'dasha ba'apim mishar yisei. And what Gabriel does is that as Shevna leaves the city of Yerushalayim, so Gabriel shuts the door, so the only one now who has left the city of Yerushalayim is only Shevna, but the people stayed, his followers stayed inside of Yerushalayim. Amrulei. So now, Sancheriv and his army said to Shevna, "We're now on the top of Chavavah Midbeis. Mishar Secha Hecha, where are all your followers? You said that you and your people are going to surrender to me. It's just you. Amar Hajubi. So Shevna looks around, sees nobody's with him, and with a shoulder shrug, he says, I guess they backed out. So the Syrian army said, okay, so basically you're mocking us. That's what it seems like. And so what they did is they pierced his heel, they tied it to the tails of a horse, and they dragged him over the thorns and thistles. And the Gemara just adds one more point over here. Shevna was a balhana. He enjoyed pleasuring his body. Rashi gives two pshatim. The second pshat in Rashi is that he was involved in Mishkav Zachor. Again, the Gemara links the word sochenes used by Avishag and used regarding Shevna, and speaks to the idea that he enjoyed physical pleasures of this world. The Gemara goes on and explains another pasuk in light of everything that we just discussed in the incident of Shevna and Chizkiyahu. The Gemara quotes the pasuk. This is from Tehillim. Ki hashesus, ve'omer, ki hashesus yarsun tzadik ma'pa'al. When the shesus is destroyed, so what do we say regarding the tzadik? And the Gemara goes on to explain what does this pasuk in Tehillim mean in light of our discussion. So the Gemara brings down a Rav Yehuda Rav Eina. Two Amoraim are discussing the pshat in the pasuk. Chadamar. Ilu Chizkia v'siyata ne'rasim, had Chizkia and his group had been destroyed, Tzadik Mapa'al, so then Hashem, meaning Tzadik over here making reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mapa'al, what we have done, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have allowed Tzidkiyahu, who's such a Tzadik, to have been destroyed. Chanamar, and the Gemara gives another pshat, which is Ilu Beis HaMikdash Yare Tzadik Mapa'al. So the Beis HaMikdash, the Shesus over here making reference to the Beis HaMikdash, had the Beis HaMikdash been destroyed. So Tzadik Mapa'al. Tzadik over here making reference to Chizkiyah, meaning Chizkiyah, what exactly what would have his tzidkus have helped us out? Meaning that Chizkiyah was such a tzaddik, the Beis HaMikdash would not have been destroyed for Chizkiyahu. Ve'ul Amar, and now we're going to give a third pshat over here. Ilam Achshavas of Sha'osa Rasha Enam Nairasos, had the plans of that Rasha, meaning here a reference to Shevna, had the plans of Shevna not been destroyed, Tzadik Mapa'al, so then what good would have been to have a tzaddik like Chizkiyahu? So basically, the word in Tehillim, Shesus, could either be a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, or the plans of Shevna, or it could have been a reference to Chizkiyahu. So the Gemara goes on to explain. So as far as the last pshat that we just said, that's a reference to the plans of Shevna. So the Gemara says that works out very well, because what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, is he destroyed them. So Laman Damar Beis HaMikdash Nami did not. And I can even say that's talking about the Beis HaMikdash as well, because Evan Haisa Sham Miyamos Nevi'im Rishon V'Shesia Haisa Nikres. The Mishnah describes the Evan HaShesia, that is the foundation stone, the stone that is the center, the epicenter of the world, and that is the base on which the Beis HaMikdash is built upon. So so you see that the Beis HaMikdash is foundationally built on the Shesia. So again, so the word Shesus could be described as the Beis HaMikdash, could be referring to the Beis HaMikdash. Elaman Damer Chizkia V'siyato Hecheshkan Tzadik and Dikrei Shesus. But if we're going to go with the pshat that the pasuk in Tehillim using the word Shesus is making reference to Chizkia, where do we see the word Shesus is used in conjunction with the tzaddik? The Gemara says, no, we do see it. The pasuk says, "Ki Hashem mitzuke eretz v'yashas aleim tevel." Kadosh Baruch Hu, the pillar of the world and the foundation, and the Gemara assumes that the foundation of the world are tzaddikim. Or the Gemara quotes another pasuk that also speaks to this idea that the one who gives advice and counsel and higdil toshia, that's the tzaddik. So you see a couple of pesukim that make reference to the idea that a tzaddik can be referred to as toshia. Why is Torah made reference to as Toshia? Because what it does is it weakens the individual. Or another pshat, why Torah is referred to as Toshia, is because the Torah was given to us in privacy and secrecy as a result of the satan. Davar acher toshia dvarim shatou shaolam mishoset aleihem. Another pshat of why Torah is referred to as toshia, because Torah is not concrete. It's words, it's ideas, and yet the entire world is sitting on top of Torah, meaning it's the foundation of the world. Amar ula. The Gemara makes one more comment before going back to the Mishnah. Machshava mo'al safilu dvar Torah. The way Rashi explains the Gemara over here, machshava means anxiety. Right? Rashi writes, Dagas alev al mezonos afashal adam. A person, unfortunately, is really struggling financially. He's not sure where his next meal is going to be coming from. So as a result of that, he's gripped with anxiety. And such anxiety, says Ula, is going to affect even your learning. Meaning you're not going to be able to focus and concentrate on your learning as a result of such anxiety. And it's actually going to cause you to forget some of your learning. So again, the Gemara brings this in because, once again, we're using the word Toshia, and it's in reference to the Torah, and a person will not be able to successfully remember his Torah as a result of the anxiety that he has. However, the Rabbah does make another comment, which is that if a person is learning Torah Lishma, so then even the anxiety is not going to affect his Torah learning. Rabos Mashenema, Rabos Machshavos Belevishvatzas Hashem, He Sakum. Eitze Sheish Bo Dvar Hashem, He Takum La'olam. The Gemara darshans the Pasuk, that when a person has Atzas Hashem, and it's Dvar Hashem, meaning he's learning for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his Torah Lishma. So such an individual is going to have his Torah retained forever, and it will not be influenced or affected by his anxiety. I'm Rav Yehuda Amasai. We are now back to the Mishnah that started in Chavdalam and Beis. So the Mishnah brought in the opinion of Rav Yehuda, which, as we discussed in the beginning of the Sugya, may not be arguing with the Tanakhama, but just may be explaining the Tanakhama. But in any event, Rav Yehuda says that if a person gambles, but only on the side, and he has a day job, so such a person is not going to be Pasul Eidah. So Gemara now goes on to explain, I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Lazar, Allah, Rav Yehuda. That's the halacha. I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Lazar, Kulan Srichim Hachraza Bebeistin. Any of the people that we mentioned back in the Mishnah, who are gamblers, lenders with interest, gatherers of Shvias. So, yes, they are disqualified, but their disqualification will only come after an announcement is made that they are disqualified. Meaning that this is not bona fide gzela. These are enactments that are made by the Chachamim, and therefore, in order for them to be formally and officially disqualified, so Beis Din has to make an announcement. Roa, what about a shepherd? If a person is a shepherd, which we said is pasul eidus, so does he need a announcement? So this is a machlokas amoraim. Bish lama laman dam lo bayachraza hainu dam rav yehuda amarav stam roa pasul. So the Gemara says now, for the position that you do not need an announcement, it fits into what we learned towards the beginning of today's shir, which is that the Gemara quoted in the name of Rav that a roa does that a shepherd is automatically pasul, and so therefore we all know that no announcement is needed. Elamanda by achraza, but according to the one who says that a shepherd does need a achraza, my stam roa pasul. So what is he going to do with the statement of Rav? Because Rav said that every shepherd is pasul. So the b'stama machriz na'alaham. So the Gemara says that what Rav meant is that not only is a shepherd pasul, but we can also assume that a proclamation was made. But a proclamation has to be made, and unless it's made, even a shepherd is not going to be automatically disqualified. There was a gift document, and on this gift document, you had two people signing on the gift document, and the only problem was, and it's not a small problem, is that they were thieves. So Rav Papa said, okay, I know that's a problem, but I'll also argue that no formal proclamation was made regarding the disqualification of these two thieves, and therefore the signatures are going to be valid, and the shtar itself is going to be valid. Amalei Rava nihi debein an achraza begazlan derabbanan begazlan deraisa mibein achraza. So Rava says no. The only time you need an achraza is only for the examples of our Mishnah, which are psule derabbanan. So they need a achraza, but if somebody's a gazlan in a Torah, of course he doesn't need a achraza. Automatically he becomes pasul. Simon, Devar Ba'ara is Ganav. So the Gemara now is going to quote three halachas in the name of Rav Nachman. I'm Rav Nachman, Ochle Davar Acher, Psulim La'edah. Somebody who is Ochle Davar Acher. Now, generally speaking, the Gemara talks about Davar Acher, the Gemara is talking about eating Chazer. But that's not what the Gemara means over here. Rashi tells us, and it's going to be clear from the context of the Gemara, it means somebody who's collecting tzedakah from a non-Jew. In other words, the person is in need, he's an Ani, and he's collecting money, but he's collecting money from a non-Jew, and such an action is not good. I am reading Rashi inside. Ochle davar achir. Rashi writes, "Mekabel tzedakah min anachrim davi chil Hashem." So Rashi writes that this is a chil Hashem. Why? Machmas mamon vavalei kerasha dechamas. He's compared to a rasha dechamas, which is an expression we're going to see in tomorrow's daf. But basically, it's a chil Hashem. The reason why it's a chil Hashem, most probably, is because he could have collected from a Jew and decided, I'm not going to collect from a Jew, I'm going to collect from a non-Jew. And then what the non-Jew is going to say after giving to the poor is, oh, those Jewish people, it's strange. They don't support their own poor people. And that, by definition, creates a chil Hashem. But the Gemara qualifies this psul. Hani Mili, the Gemara says, Befar Hesya. That's only if this ani is collecting from the non-Jew, but publicly, of a betzina law. But if he's collecting privately and people don't know about it, so then he does not become posel edus. And the Gemara goes on to say that that's only true if he had a means of collecting privately. But if he did not have a means of collecting privately, and he collected publicly from the non-Jew, so he's not going to be disqualified. But if he had no other way of supporting himself, and he needed money, and private collection was simply not an option, so then he can publicly collect even from a non-Jew, and it will not disqualify him from being an aid. I'm Rav Nachman. A second halacha by Rav Nachman, and if you look back at the simanim, this is now arayos. So I'm Rav Nachman, achashad al arayos kashal edus. If somebody suspected of being involved in arayos, so he's kashal edus. Tosos here says very clearly, we don't know that he was involved in arayos, but we have a suspicion. We have a cause to believe that he is involved in arayos. So let's say rumors are circulating. You and I shouldn't be involved in such rumors, but. And speaking such rumors, but okay. But anyway, but rumors are circulating. And so, but we don't know for a fact that he was involved in arayos, but there's suspicion to believe that he is. So such an individual is pasul edus. So Amar Rav Sheshet, Ani Mari Arban Bekadfei. I'm sorry. Rav Nachman says he's kashal edus, that such an individual is acceptable, because there are only rumors, we don't know this to be so, and therefore he's kashal edus. So I'm Rav Sheshet, Ani Mari Arban Bekadfei. So Rav Sheshet says, I can't believe this. In other words, the person's going to be subject to Malkus. Rashi and Tosfos both point out over here that the Gemara we saw back in Kedushin, the Gemara says, the end of Masechta Kedushin, that when a person is behaving in a way where we don't know he's involved in arayos, but again, we have a good suspicion that he's involved in arayos, so he's subject to Malkus Mardus. He's going to get rabbinic lashes. So Rav Sheshet says, I don't understand. Such an individual is going to get Malkus, and you tell me he's Kashal Eidus? So Amarava Umoda Rav Nachman Ling Eidus Isha Shu Pasal. So Rava says, Rav Nachman, I'm sorry, before I go on to the Gemara, Rav Nachman wasn't moved by that argument. I guess what Rav Nachman would tell you is that, look, for the suspicious behavior, he's going to get Malkus, but that doesn't mean that he was actually involved in arayos. And so, again, you need a technical, formal reason to apostle somebody. And this person, although, again, he's not behaving in the best of manners, but has not hit the threshold where he's actually going to be apostolatus. Okay, Amar Rava, Moed Rav Nachman Linyan Edus Isha Shu Pasul. So Rava says that even Rav Nachman, who is going to allow this person who is suspect of arayos to be an aid, to continue to be an aid, but Rava says that if the testimony is regarding somebody's wife, meaning that the guy comes back overseas and he says, you know, your husband's dead, which we learned in the last couple parakim of Yevamos, we're going to believe one witness. We're going to believe a woman on this issue. But if this person who was suspected on arayos, if this was a person who's coming back and saying your husband died, so even Rav Nachman would tell us that we're not going to believe him. So, and the reason would be because we are suspicious of the fact that the reason why he's saying this is so that he can marry this woman. Now the Gemara says, now this is only regarding so that this woman is going to leave her husband, meaning he's coming back overseas and he's saying that your husband's dead. So for that, we are not going to believe him, because again, he is chashad al arayos, and we suspect that he's saying this only so that he can marry this woman. If, however, his edus is going for the other direction, which means that he's providing edus that this woman is a married woman, so there, he's going to be believed. Pshit, the Gemara says, well, that's obvious, meaning, what gain does he get from saying that these two people are married? So the Gemara says, ma'u d'te ma'ha d'ifalei d'chsev ma'im g'nuvim min taku, v'chulei. So the Gemara says, the Havamina would have gone like this. I might have thought that he actually does have a gain by having this woman continue to be married, because then he can continue to have bia with a married woman. The Pasuk says, that stolen water is sweeter. And again, the Gemara here speaks to the powerful idea of that the Yetzer Hara has a real benefit of violating Yisurim. And so for this person, the Gemara has a Havamina that the better for him that the woman be married, so that he'd be having bia with a married woman, and that would be more exciting to him than her being single. And so that's a Havamina. The Gemara says that's what Rav is telling us, that we don't accept that Havamina in this particular context. The idea is still a powerful idea, but just not applied over here. Amar Rav Nachman. One more halacha from Rav Nachman of the three halachas. This is Ganav. So Amar Rav Nachman, Ganav Nisav, Ganav Tishrei, Lo Shmei Ganav. So a thief who steals but only 1 month out of the year, so that's not considered Ganav. So obviously the Gemara here is not to be taken literally, meaning not to be taken right now at its superficial level. In other words, you steal one time, you're a Ganav. You steal a month out of the year, you're a Ganav. The Gemara does not mean, Rav Nachman does not mean that just the temporary Ganav is not considered Ganav. What he means is as follows. The Gemara is going to explain. We're talking about where he's a sharecropper, and he's taking a little bit, and he's taking a little bit at the when the produce is ready to be harvested. And Rashi points out that at this point in time, he could be more a heter. The person over here is going to be making a good rationalization. Now, when I say good, I don't mean good meaning it's a correct rationalization, but it is totally understandable. The Rashi writes, the third wide line down, Detarch be umore hetera. He's working really hard in the land. He is a sharecropper, and he's rationalizing. Litol davar mu'at yoser achalkob min metarcho. He's working so hard, so he's going to take a little bit extra. And he's a sharecropper, which means that to a certain degree, he's a partner in the land. So, again, none of it's right, but it's understandable. And as a result of that, he's not going to be pasul eidus. The Gemara now tells a quick anecdote where the farmer of Rav Zvid, now it's not a sharecropper, it's just he's working on the land. So one of them stole barley, and so Rav Zvid said, okay, you're no good, you're pasul. And unlike the previous case of Rav Nachman, where he was a sharecropper and he was a partner of the land, over here he was just a worker and he had no right to take, and there wasn't even a rationalization to do so, and so therefore he was pasul. V'chad ganav kibur de'ahini upasle, and another one took also dates from the land, and again he had no right to do so, he's a thief, and so therefore Razid pasled him. Hanukkah Buri de Kavar Nafshei B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Atzeres. So one last story for today's daf. There were grave diggers, and they buried somebody on the first day of Shavuos. The Gemara in Beitza on Daf Vav described and taught us that on Yantov Sheni Shogalios you're allowed to bury. Our minhag nowadays we don't do that, but Aliba the Gemara, according to the Gemara, you're allowed to bury on Yantov Sheni Shogalios. On Yantov Rishon, if somebody, Rechman Aslan, died on Yantov Rishon, so you can bury him, but Al Yedei Nachri. In other words, you can instruct a non-Jew to do so, but we do not have the permission to bury on Yantov Rishon. However, these grave diggers did bury somebody on Yantov Rishon. So Shamtu Rapa Pasul Eidus. So Papa heard about this, so he excommunicated these grave diggers. They had no business digging up a grave on Yantov Rishon. And on top of that, he also disqualified them from Eidus. V'achshonu Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. Now when Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua heard this, so he said, no, they're not Pasul Eidus, they're Kashul Eidus. So Amalu Rav Papa V'Rishayim Ninus. Rav Papa says, what are you doing? They're Rishayim, they're blatant violation of Yantov. So Savri Mitzvah Kavdi. So again, the Gemara here speaks to this idea. But they thought they were doing the right thing. And in terms of pasul eidus, that's really important, because pasul, you know, the reason why the chachamim pasul people for eidus is because they're doing bad and they know they're doing bad. But if what you're doing at least you think is the right thing, even though it may not be, but if what you're doing you think is the right thing, so that doesn't disqualify you eidus. So the Gemara says, yeah, but they were excommunicated. How could they think that they're doing the right thing when they were not only doing the wrong thing, but they were excommunicated, which is a clear communication to them that what they did was wrong. So, Savri Kapar Kavdilu Rabbanan. So Rabbi Ravuna said in their defense, no, the excommunication, they probably thought that was just a means of kapara, meaning that, well, you know, they did what they had to do, and the fact that the Chachamim excommunicated them was just part of the process, but not censoring their action, but just simply providing an element of kapara for what they thought they had to do. Okay, stop over here. So just as a quick recap now. So today's daf, continuation of this idea of various people who are apostle eidus. We started off with shepherds and tax collectors. Got us to describing the father, Rabbi Zera, who was clearly a good person and a good tax collector, which speaks to the idea that not all tax collectors are bad, and they're not apostle eidus unless you know that they're stealing. And the Gemara gave pshat in the Mishnah when the Mishnah said that b'tchila hayukorna some osvei shvius. Originally they were called collectors of shvius, and the Gemara gave a couple pshatim of what that means in the Mishnah. And then the Gemara launched into a lengthy description of the incident of Reish Lakish and the two Amoraim who were going to Asya in order to add another month to the year to be Ma'abri Shana, and they're passing a couple of people, and Reish Lakish's comments on their actions and chastises them, and they're defensive of their the other Chachamim were defensive of the actions, and it covered most of Chavav and Alf. The Reish Lakish, when referring to the Talmid Chachamim, referred to them as Kesher Rishayim, which then led the Gemara to discuss where this term Kesher Rishayim comes from, and that launched into another lengthy description of Shevna and Chizkiyahu, where the term Kesher Rishayim is being used. Then the Gemara paskin the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, in that if a person gambles but on the side he has a job, so he's not pasul eidus. And then the Gemara discussed that if a person is pasul eidus but pasul midrabanan, so he requires a achraza, meaning he's not going to be pasul until there's an actual announcement made by Basin that such an individual is pasul eidus, but prior to that point in time, he's not going to be pasul eidus. And then the Gemara quoted three halachas in the name of Rav Nachman. And then finally, the last thing we saw was the gravediggers who thought they were doing the right thing even though they were violating Yantav, and as a result of that, they were not pasul eidus.